ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Speak with Mad Singers. So if you're listening to the video version or watching the video version of the show, I've still got a smile on my face. I had a really good chat with Mads. We've just wrapped it up. We just finished. But, you know, I really enjoyed it because, you know, he was just really like talking my language in terms of, you know, everything the way he describes SEO and what it does. And something that he didn't share on the call, but he kind of shared just shortly after was, you know, he said, you know, the people who are making money in SEO are not those kind of really geeky, nerdy types that are focusing on the minute detail. It's the people that are business people, that are the people that are competitive business people, that are the guys that are crushing it, the guys that are really doing the job. And I totally see that. And I totally agree with that as well. So there was lots of great insight. It was kind of, Mads is a slightly different person to than other interviews that we've done, in that he kind of sits, you know, a large part of his business is management consultancy. So he works with huge organizations, but also small organizations. But he very much focuses on the SEO and digital marketing world. So he kind of only deals with those kind of companies, or at least, you know, if he's dealing with enterprise or huge organizations, he's dealing with the SEO kind of facility or the SEO arm of that organization. So he also runs an event. He's run two of them before, and he's running another one again in September. So they're every 6 months, called SEO Mastery, where he gets lots of speakers on to talk SEO. So we have a really good conversation about the SEO Mastery event and the speakers and some of the learnings from that, which definitely can be applied to what we do as content publishers. And we also talk about a little bit about, you know, how do you go about building a small team to efficiently kind of manage and run a site, whether that's, you know, by employing an agency or a series of agencies or just individuals to do that. Like how do you make that happen? How do you make that efficient? You know, how do you get the best return on investment? So I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. I really enjoyed talking to Mads. Just a quick shout out for a couple of things on our site again, if you haven't checked them out yet. So we also talk on the show with Mads about, you know, how expired or aged or auction domains are still like so relevant today. And Mads describes them as an unfair advantage. Like, and it's got like, we totally see that. And that's probably why you always hear us banging on about it. So, you know, we source aged domains. If you haven't checked them out yet, you can go to our site, Niche Web. I'm a mixture between niche and niche these days, because I'm half American and half English these days, the way I speak. But nichewebsite.builders/domains for expired domains. And we also put some resources up onto the site, which are things like, you know, how do you increase your ad revenue from making small optimizations on your site. And I can't remember off the top of my head what the other one was, but there's a couple of resources there that we've done as kind of like ebook time style things. So if you head over to nichewebsite.builders/resources, and you can kind of go and pick them up there. But for now, I'll stop talking and we'll hand over to Mads, and I hope you enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added, so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome back to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I speak with Mad Singers. Mad Singers is a management coach, works with companies large and small, but mainly in a capacity as a in the SEO world, working with SEOs. He recently had an event, an online event called SEO Mastery, which brought a lot of industry players to have a conversation, essentially, on different topics of SEO. And he's currently preparing, so I've just heard, for the next event too in September. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But I just want to welcome Mads to the show. Welcome, Mads.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it'd be really good at the start, I think, to give our audience a little bit of a rundown for those people that haven't heard much about you or haven't heard about your SEO Mastery event and what you do, to hear a little bit about yourself. Yeah. So I'll let you take it away.
Definitely. So as you say, I'm a management coach and consultant. I work with lots of SEOs, so lots of big SEOs that are generally SEOs that are trying to grow and scale, right? One thing most SEOs have in common is they're not great managers, and most don't have management background and experience. So both building a small team, but also for the ones that actually manage to build a small team and starting to hiring managers within the business and so on, they often struggle with one thing, which is, you know, actually getting consistent delivery. So I work with a lot of those people. I work with a lot of great SEOs, people like Matt Diggity. I work with the Ahrefs guys and lots of great SEOs around the world. And yeah, that's really my sort of key passion. So I also run the SEO Mastery Summit, which basically the goal for me is to provide some free to low cost SEO knowledge for everyone in the SEO world, right? So obviously, going to physical conferences and stuff is extremely valuable, and there's a lot of stuff to learn and benefit from in that sense, right? But the beautiful thing we have with online is that it really gives us a significant opportunity to provide great content. And we started this sort of in the beginning of the lockdown, and we ran the first event in November last year, and then another one here in March. So basically the goal is we run it twice a year. A couple of things that makes it very different from normal conferences is we try and never have the same speakers twice, which means that it's always new faces. And we do that both because we don't want to constantly have the same people, because with a lot of conferences, you always see the same faces on the roster time after time. So we're trying to make sure we get a good turnaround in people. Also because there is so many great SEOs out there, right? There's so many people, and not everyone, you know, famous, and that's not our goal. Our goal is really to provide an event that really teaches a lot of great SEO at a low to no cost, right? So that's really our fundamental focus with the SEO Mastery Summit. And again, getting people exposure. I mean, I've done public speaking for 10 years, and even though speaking at an online conference is not the same, it is a good way to practice. So many people who want to be speakers, who want to, you know, improve that skill level, it's also, from my point of view, also a great opportunity to do so. And yeah, that's another great benefit we try and provide. So that's it.
Yeah, well, I attended a number of the sessions in the last event. They're very good. Yeah, so I think that's a really good idea. Because my immediate thought then when you said, well, you know, I don't have the same speaker twice. I think you're going to run out of speakers, but of course you're not. You know, there's only so many people that are visible in public. There's many, many, many great SEOs around the world. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I guess
definitely. I mean, someday we might, right? But we're running the third event now, and we have more people signing up wanting to talk than we've ever had. So definitely, it's not slowing down. Let's say it that way.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I guess from a pure business perspective for you, like, I guess this is your audience, right? Like the people that are going to be coming to the event, you know, it's kind of a lead gen into your management consulting. Is that the idea?
A few things. I mean, my core focus with it is it haven't as much been lead gen. Let's say it that way, right? I love talking to people. I love doing podcasts. I love doing videos and so on. And the benefit is when you get to a certain stage in business, you can start focusing more on the things you like. And I love interviewing people, talking with people, and it pains me, but I'm not great at writing. And as an SEO, and if you like ranking for stuff, content is great, particularly in the written word, but I do I am much better at the spoken word. So I, again, try to play with my strength and place my strengths and so on. So, yeah.
Definitely. I can sympathize with that. Yeah, I'm not a writer at all either. And I can also concur that you like the opportunity to talk as well, because we only did it yesterday, and you said you can come on the podcast the next day. So definitely yeah. Great. So yeah, thanks again for doing that at short notice. It's great.
I think for a lot of people, right, like a lot of people are so busy being busy, and I think a lot of the time there's a good old saying that the best way to learn is to teach, and I'm a core believer in that, and I love teaching everything. No matter what level I'm at, just because, you know, when you're trying to teach things, when you're explaining concepts, it helps you make it much clearer yourself, which is just a huge benefit.
I agree. And it like identifies the holes that you didn't realize you didn't know as well. Like, I used to work at Microsoft as a consultant, when you're getting to consult with somebody, I mean, a consultant is like, they always say, you know, you only need to be like a day ahead of the person you're teaching, because like, you don't need to be miles ahead. But when you're actually talking at an event or something like that, or you suddenly go into the topic and then you suddenly realize, oh, what if somebody asks me on this very specific area, I'm not really going to have a good answer. So then you have to go down and you get better as a, in your understanding, actually, I think.
Definitely.
Cool. So a couple of questions about the event then. So, all the events that you've been running, and I guess just really from your experience over the years, like if you were just to in a few paragraphs had to describe, you know, what it means to be an SEO in 2021, what would you say?
Yeah, I think the key things is really about being able to gather and comprehend. I call it basics, but really understand what does it take to rank in Google. I think one of the key things that I see is that I think most SEOs, and that's a personality thing, most SEOs love learning and love acquiring knowledge more than they like putting it into action. And I think a lot of the time people complicate things a lot more than they need to. My personal view, also running a small SEO company where we build our own sites and so on, is that 80-20 is still around content and links.
Yep.
Right. And I think, like, yes, there's technical stuff. Yes, there's speed stuff. Yes, there is various things. But reality is that most people spend so much time looking for golden nuggets that in principle by themselves doesn't end up making a big difference. But a lot of the time people's like, oh, I made this content, it's not ranking. There must be a magic key to make it rank. Whereas really my experience is the magic key in SEO is consistency, right? So in SEO, you typically don't see amazing results the first day you start doing stuff, right? So when you post content, when you're doing links, you see gradual improvements, and over time, at some point, ideally, you get to some kind of hockey curve, right? And that's my experience, right? Every site we work on that gets significantly better, it's not a question of, oh, we pressed this magic. I mean, sometimes there's obvious mistake, like, oh, this page wasn't indexed or whatever, right? But again, like, you don't need to be an expert to find those. You can either pay other people to do that very simply and so on. But for me, basically, if you can build a solid content process as number one, to have a solid content output, that is absolute key, right? Or sometimes you can buy it too from companies or services or the likes, but a consistent company content output based on solid keyword research, right? That is for me number one. And then links are still a big thing, right? They are, there's definitely more and more examples where you can rank without links. But for me, again, it's that kind of, it's the rocket fuel, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're ranking with links, without links, a few links would make you rank significantly better, right? So that's how I still look at it. It's still a very worthwhile investment. And again, that might change in the future, but at this point in time, links is definitely still worthwhile. Now, obviously, again, there's many ways to acquire those, but I basically look at most SEO companies from my point of view should look at those two pillars as the main thing, and probably content as number one, right? The beautiful thing about links is that it's probably the easiest service to actually go and buy. It's the easiest thing. Like, you can go buy content or get people to write your content, but you need to make sure you have a solid, you know, content ground. You need to make sure that, you know, again, your keyword research is solid and the quality is top-notch, right? And with links, you don't really have the same. I mean, you obviously want good links, but it's easier to buy them than it is to go and pay some random person $100 and then get a magical piece of content,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Wow, it's like listening to myself talking. You're like, you're speaking exactly the same language that I do. I like, I talk to people like my sister or friends or family, and like, you know, I like, you can do this. Like, there's people who write, you know, they like writing. And I'm like, but they're like, oh no, I just don't understand. I could never. I'm like, I'll do the keyword research for you. Like, I'll tell you what articles to go and write, and you can go and write them. And honestly, it'll just, and people that aren't in our world just don't have the faith, but really it's so simple. It's so, like, you can overcomplicate what we do in SEO and stuff, but really just get the keyword research right and write great content, and that's going to get you a long way. And then add some links and you know, you're there. Like, and what I also hear is, I was like, there's a lot of people that are kind of looking at the other fringe stuff. So they're looking at, like, you know, what should the meta description be, or what's the you know, how do I speed up my site by 0.1 milliseconds, you know. So forget that stuff. It's fast enough. Just, like, get on with the content.
Yeah, so the key thing for me, and this is, again, most SEOs want to know everything because they like it. I'm by nature guilty of that myself. But as a business person, I understand it makes no sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I was coaching a very big SEO guy at one point, and you know, he was like, oh, yeah, I'm trying to make my team expert at speed optimization. I'm like, dude, so you want to hire a full-time person to do a speed optimization for the 3, 4, 5 websites that you run? I'm like, you're going to pay a developer like X grand a month to do so, right? There's people who do this for $300-$500 per site. Like, go and pay them a once-off fee, get it optimized, and, you know.
Yep.
Like, most SEOs are horrible at business decisions, right? They like nerding into all the nerdy stuff, but reality is that most of all this, like, even doing audits, like, pay someone else to do it. Your time is better spent focusing on the things that makes the biggest difference, right? If there's someone who's great at running a technical audit or a content audit or whatever, get them to do it, provide you a recommendation, take action on the recommendation, and, you know, it's your payday.
Yeah, for sure. So some of these sites that you said that you're building for yourself with this other company, how are those monetized? Like, what kind of sites are they?
Ads, affiliates, okay. Primary. We have a few that kind of do sort of lead gen, but ads and affiliate is the main monetization model.
Okay, cool, interesting. And kind of what sort of affiliate programs you generally work with? Private affiliate programs with Amazon, like how?
So it's a mix. So depending a lot on the site and the niche, if we are like we are in a few niches that are broad physical products. And what we do is we tend to start out with Amazon. Most people, I love Amazon because they're easy, they're simple. And it's very easy to see what you actually sell. So as soon as you're selling more than, you know, if you have a page that's making 10 plus sales a month, go look for a different affiliate, or at least the number one offer you have, go and look for an external affiliate and get higher pay. But the thing is, I see so many people, you know, if they have 50 best posts, and they're like, oh, I don't want to use Amazon. And then they go around and find, you know, top 10 products for 50 best posts. So like 500 unique products. Now, the time it takes you to troll through a bunch of affiliate products and find 500 other offers that are not on Amazon,
yeah,
just because you hate Amazon, is not, in my experience, a very efficient process, right?
Yeah.
So if you are in that product world, I totally recommend using Amazon initially and then swapping out and looking when you're actually getting significant traffic, when you're actually generating a certain amount of sales, then for those products where you're doing those sales, like, go and find one or two alternatives, yeah, or something, right?
I agree once again, exactly how I'd, and exactly what I would suggest doing. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's no point in doing all that, spending all that time finding the deals and negotiating deals. If you don't know, you might not end up selling anything. So, yeah, wait till you know. Now,
obviously, there's other niches where physical product isn't a thing, and then Amazon might not be great. Yes. And that totally makes sense, right? But definitely, if Amazon is relevant, and again, like if you have an article that you know is going to be the center of your site, yes, go and find one or two, three products that are not Amazon and put them on. And if you know that's the keyword you really want to bank on, like do that up front, right? That's all right. But just like, again, I kind of look at an 80-20, right? Like don't, like, sometimes I see people even with like $10 products where they're running around trying to find these affiliates. And I'm like, you'll actually make more with Amazon, even if they give you a 10x commission, because with Amazon, you also get paid for all the orders and so on, mm-hmm. right? So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the masters of upsell and things like that as well. Okay.
Yep.
So if we give us a little bit of a flavor of your last event. So like, what were some of the tactics or the best nuggets that kind of really stood out for you in the last event?
Yeah. So I mixed the events up a little bit just because I do all the recordings and I know the people, most of the people pretty well. So I do mix it up a little bit, who spoke when and so on, but I think the last event. So let me take a few. So definitely the first event we have was sort of Kyle Roof and very much his way of doing his reverse silos and so on, was something that was very interesting, and the whole way of sort of tying it around and really using that effectively is something we have tested with a lot of success, right? Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said. Again, 80-20, there's a lot to be said for just make a ton of relevant internal links, and, you know, that works.
Yes.
However, sometimes there's definitely things that are better than that, right? We have Brendan Tully actually went through his, like his team at BP Speedfix basically do speed optimization. He went through literally the whole process of how to do it. So again, if you want to be ineffective and waste your time on that, Brendan's presentation is absolutely amazing. You could also just pay him a couple $100 to get his team to do it for you. But either of those were solid. We had Jared Spearing talking a bit about automation, which I think was also super interesting, just how to automate your processes and particularly stuff with Excel sheets and even simple things like macros and stuff like that can often, for SEOs, can often help you cut a lot of time off some very repeatable processes, right? So that was definitely a big one as well. Always love talking with Rick Lomas as well. He was talking about how to avoid Google penalties and kind of links to go for them. Particularly if you are doing links in-house, that was definitely an amazing conversation. Again, I tend to just pay him a couple $100 to tell me what links to remove once in a while. But you could also, I mean, if you're acquiring links, definitely his stuff was excellent to listen to. And then Stacey McNaughty, always freaking amazing, talks about like link building and PR and all that kind of stuff, which she's amazing to listen to. Every time she speaks, she's lots of good stuff. And then lastly, we had Tim Brown, who was talking a lot about content. And it was, I forgot what that famous content form is called. Anyways, Tim Brown was sharing a lot of stuff about content and how to build solid content pieces and his whole process for actually doing solid research and really pushing that through. And that was, I definitely learned a lot from that as well. So.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I didn't, we work quite a lot with Rick Lomas as well. And I didn't, we pay him to kind of do stuff for us. And, I didn't hear his session. So, you know, I guess one of the questions I was going to ask you further down the road, but like we can probably cover it here. We're talking about Rick. Like, did he talk about like, you know, planning forward for like, you know, how do I just like remain or try to remain? You can never guarantee in Google's good books in regards of updates, not necessarily penalties, but kind of just updates as well. Like you might get a penalty, but you might get affected by an update. So, was there any conversation around that?
I would say Indirectly, because basically his focus is trying to figure out what links works and which ones sometimes get you in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, the point is, if you avoid the links that sometimes get you in trouble, you're obviously less likely to get penalized either manually or algorithmically, right? So yes. I would say indirectly. Obviously, yeah, he does talk a little bit about the future proving as well. But I think the main focus for me, at least, is really understanding, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and from that perspective, what really makes sense to do.
Right? Okay, cool. So in terms of, you know, going forward, did you, SEO changes, right? Every few years, SEO is different to what it was 2 years ago. Like, do you have any kind of view on kind of what we should be, preparing ourselves for, like looking forward to in the coming years? Like, do you have any kind of view on that?
So I'd say number one is I don't plan 10 years ahead with SEO. Both because it changes and also because I don't know what it will look like if it will actually be here in 10 years.
Yeah. I said two, by the way, not 10, but just in case.
Yeah, no, but totally. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, I definitely don't plan 10 years ahead. So what I tend to do is I look at the current trends. I believe the right thing to do is use what works right now. And yeah, there's some things that works extremely well, right? And I would say probably like, I mean, some of the strategies that apparently stopped working a few years ago are still for me the best. So working with expired domains and auction domains and stuff, they still work so incredibly well. Yeah. Right. And I think there's probably no better time than now to actually utilize those as much as you possibly can, because at some point they might stop. But at the moment that it just gives such an unfair advantage.
Again, you probably don't even realize, but yeah, you're absolutely talking a language. Like, everything you're saying is like exactly what we're on at the moment. We don't stop talking about expired domains on our podcast, and we actually source domains for our clients, but also just generally at auction, ones that are going to work well, haven't got a bad history or anything like that for our, and sell them on our site. So it's something that we're just going on about all the time, because we've just seen like incredible success with them. And like you say, it is like an unfair advantage. So, I assume you're using expired domains with your portfolio of sites that you're working on as well.
Obviously.
Yeah. I could do it.
In fairness, I one of the things I do is I run a big outsourcing company, and probably at the peak around 2016, we were building around 15,000-16,000 PBNs a week.
Right. Wow.
Primarily for clients, but we were building a lot of them, so we had a lot of experience building PBNs and so on. Right. And by the way, PBN still works extremely well. The key thing is that the game has changed a little bit, right? You need to understand a little bit more of what you're doing, and you need to make sure you understand how to actually, you know, activate that power and so on. But generally, it still works extremely well, right? So a lot of the time, yeah, I mean, we still do a lot with expired domains. Auction domains obviously have a benefit in many cases, but
yeah.
You know, obviously, there's also a cost difference, right? So if you can get the same amount of domain power for about a fourth or a fifth of the cost for an expired domain, you know, you can basically afford to be wrong four or five times for the same price, right? So there's something to be said with either. But most of it is just, I mean, over at FatRank, there's an ideal guide on really how to use both expired and auction domains. How to make sure you set them up first and, you know, get them checked out. But basically nowadays, like, even if you end up doing 301 redirects with them, you don't get a penalty. In my experience, you don't get a penalty if it doesn't work. You just don't get a benefit.
Yeah.
Right. So the main thing is just figuring out first if it actually starts ranking, like if you put the domain up and put content on it, etc., that it actually start ranking by itself. And if it starts ranking because it had a bunch of links, then, you know, typically it will bring quite a bit of value. So whenever you build a brand new site on it, or you 301 it, or whatever you do, the value is there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, we only really work with auction domains. But in terms of expired domains, are you talking about ones that kind of just didn't make it to auction that have been dropped and you're picking them up? Or are you, how do you pick up your expired domains?
Honestly, it doesn't matter. I mean, the success rate obviously is higher if they've just dropped. Mm-hmm. But reality is most of them work just as well.
Okay.
Again, in my experience,
yeah.
So I see them all work really well, right? You still, I mean, it basically comes down to when PBNs sort of were up in the air about 18, there was a lot of this like PBN testing and all this kind of stuff, and you're kind of doing the same thing when you buy expired domains, but honestly, even auction domains. I mean, sometimes Google have put you into a certain vertical, and you know, if you take a domain that used to be a fish restaurant and turn it into a fishing website, like, you know, 90% of the time it'll probably work really well. But just sometimes it just won't rank your fishing content because Google have put you into this you are restaurant
yes,
box.
Yes, yes,
right?
Totally.
So again, like all of them, you kind of have to test a little bit. But
That's exactly one of the examples we give about a restaurant as well. Like, yeah, it doesn't always fit. We stay away mostly from that kind of stuff, because from restaurants and businesses, local businesses, because they have like a lot of local business kind of links. But things that do work well, like time and time again, we see things like people businesses that are like used to be a golf course, like a golf course domain, generally works really well as a golf club reviews informational type site straight after. So it depends where you are. For some reason, we steer clear of restaurants specifically because that just seems to be an issue sometimes. But yeah, things like that, like they just work. But it's just kind of knowing that and knowing what to look out for, I think. But
a lot of the time, if you do use the domains, it's also about knowing how to sort of twist them a little bit, because you can actually work with those. The restaurant specifically, we do use quite a few of.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're always relatively cheap and no one picks them up and all that good stuff. So you can work with them, but it definitely takes a little bit of effort to kind of twist the focus on them and so on. But,
So, I mean, how do you go about sourcing your expired domains? Is that through find them?
I mean, so basically our expired domains, we typically get off a few sources. So one, we both have some people where we pick them up just from databases and so on. Yeah. I mean, expireddomains.net, even though there's a billion people looking at those, we still get a few domains that are relatively decent once in a while. We typically buy a lot from SEO.domains. They are a great provider. They have a huge, huge inventory.
Yeah.
So that for expired domains, it's typically the ones. For the auction ones, we have a few sources as well. Otis from our auction domain, ODYS, is obviously huge, and they really handle the domains extremely well. Mm-hmm. Also, a site called Authority Rush. I think they're both auction and some expired domains, but they are also super valuable, and they have a nice system.
Yeah.
And yeah, generally my experience is it's, we basically have one person who try and stay on top of all these different domain platforms and check them on a weekly basis. So what typically happens is we're operating in certain niches, and every time he finds something in those niches, he kind of alarms us, and then we take a look at them.
So. Yeah, makes sense. Awesome. So it would be good. It'd be really good to start talking a little bit on more of the management kind of side of kind of what you do, because now, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast, a lot of people that are, you know, in our audience are people, solopreneurs that are kind of building sites out. They might have one site, they might have a portfolio of sites, but generally, you know, especially once you get up to the portfolio end and you're managing a lot of sites, you kind of need to start thinking about building a team. And that might be a keyword research person, some content writer, somebody that will do the uploading. It might be a bunch of different people. And it'd be really good to talk to you a little bit about kind of, you know, how you kind of go about organizing, managing the processes that are involved in managing kind of small teams in that way to build sites.
Yeah, totally. So generally, I mean, a lot of people management is often the same, right? So it's often a case of making sure that you put the right people in the right seats, first of all, right? So personally, and with my training, I spend a lot of time talking about personalities of people. So everyone is born with certain natural character traits, right? So some people are, and most SEOs, for example, tend to be very, very detail-oriented, right? So they love nerding around in spreadsheets and data. They can't get enough of learning. And again, as I mentioned, like a lot of SEOs are not very good at executing. So if you look at most SEOs, they fall into that kind of bucket. Then the problem is a lot of the time they expect everyone else to be like them. So very often they go out and recruit people and they don't understand that they don't have the same eye for details right now. And only about 25% of the world population are by nature detail oriented, and probably about 5-10% have the amount of detail orientation that most super SEOs have, right? So you need to know what you're looking for from a personality perspective more than anything. And that's always where I start, because that is in most businesses, in most companies, that is where things tend to go wrong, right? Because if you get the wrong people on board initially, I mean, you can have the best intention in the world, but if it's not the right people, it's not going to work, right? So starting with people with the right type of personality is absolutely key. The next step is then really around making sure that you have a solid management framework, right? So that means, you know, you're doing meetings on a regular basis. So my framework is very simple. You have to meet with everyone that works directly for you every single week, 30 minutes, right? And that also forces you to actually build teams and build hierarchy if you start hiring a lot of people, because if you try and manage people, 20 people that report to you, all of them, you will find that doing 30 minutes a week with each one of them is still the best investment you can ever do, but it will take up so much of your time that you're forced to actually have a layer of managers in between. Yeah. Right. So the first and most important piece of my framework is having a solid meeting framework, both for team meetings and for one-to-one meeting with people within your team that report directly to you. The second piece is around delegation and really how to get delegation right. Again, most SEOs with their personality tend to delegate tasks instead of responsibilities. So they're like, here's the 7 buttons you click to get this result, go do it, right? But they often, even if they explain the purpose, the problem is they're not giving people responsibility. And that means that as an individual, most people, they don't feel trusted. They feel like they're just pushing buttons and they don't give a shit, right? So if you want people to care, you need to actually give them responsibility. You need to make them responsible for the outcome, for the results. And that's the way to go about it, right? So that's not always easy, but you have to do it. If you want to be successful, that is the one way to do it, right? So that's typically the focus.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. It's really hard though, like getting a team together when you're just starting out and you're building a website and you're trying to get people from maybe Upwork and places like that. You know, obviously nobody's going to care about your site more as much as you do. And especially when you're not actually employing these people, generally, I mean, most people are just kind of using them in a freelance kind of capacity. So trying to get these kind of people together, like the reason these website builders that our company was born was because of our utter frustration, Adam and I, of like even working with other agencies, like that they just did not, they, okay, sure, I care about my website more than you do, but I want at least a certain level of kind of expertise and kind of interest. And which we just thought, it just doesn't exist. Like, is it a unicorn? Can we like do it? And that's why we started the company, because we wanted to like be like that, like an agency that cares and like actually give that level of professionalism. We're going to meet a certain bar for you to make sure we get that. And I don't know why it doesn't exist, because it definitely exists out. There's definitely SEO companies that exist out that work with businesses out there in the world that kind of, that are at that level where they, you know, that do a great job. But kind of in our kind of a content publishing world, there just wasn't that same that same professionalism. It's kind of a bit more wild. And
a lot of time it's focus. So a lot of the time SEOs focus on cost instead of ROI. And that is two very, very different concepts. Again, the biggest challenge for most SEOs is they're not great at business, right? Business is about ROI, right? That is the core essence of business. If you're not providing a solid ROI with what you do, it doesn't work. The problem is if you always want the cheapest, you're not always going to get the best results, right? Mm-hmm. And the key thing is that, I mean, again, running an outsourcing company, like many times people come in like, oh, you know, I want to pay $2 an hour and I want an awesome developer. Doesn't work like that. it just doesn't work like that, right? So the whole thing is that there's always a mix between price and quality. But so the way I operate, like I use the world. I mean, I've traveled everywhere, I've been everywhere, and I hire people all over the world, right? Every continent, pretty much. And basically, there's certain types of roles, certain type of tasks, certain type of places, right? Like if I need to hire a developer, the first place I look at is Ukraine. Now there's lots of great Russians, there's a lot of great like developers in Serbia and Croatia and so on. But when I need a developer, I go look in Ukraine. That's just the place for developers. It's where, like, it's not the best developers in the world, but it's just where the ROI makes so much sense from a developer standpoint, right? If I need simple process task executioners, we always use the Philippines. They are amazing at that. They don't get bored. Like a lot of Westerners, if you ask them to go and, you know, build outreach lists every day for 6 months, they will go absolutely mentally crazy. Whereas in the Philippines, they absolutely don't mind those very repeatable tasks when you're with people, right? So again, it's understanding what fits where, right? And really understanding where do you get the best value. So again, we've generally found that the best value in terms of content writers, generally, again, there's always exceptions, but generally is hiring native speakers. Because for us, I've been on the ground in the Philippines. We have like 140, 150 staff or something like that. We have a couple of very good writers, but the challenge is that most of those extremely good writers can actually get paid more working at a local company because they have the skills that they have.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, if I have to pay them what they are worth in local rates, I'm paying the same as I could get a decent local writer, a decent native writer for. And everything else being equal, they have certain cultural things that they will understand that just generally makes the output slightly better, right? So again, it doesn't mean you can't build a solid team of writers in the Philippines. I have people, I have friends who do that, and you can. But it's just from my perspective, from my experience, the ROI of trying to do it, the time it takes, the effort you need to put in, just does not make it worth it for me. So I always hire native writers, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Once again, and I think it's actually really easy for Google to understand. Just even slight, you know, you can get a good writer, but just those slight nuances in the language and just the grammar and things like that. Just the slightly tight things that makes a native English.
For me, it's not even a Google thing. For me, it's a conversion thing. I mean, the point of most pages on a website is to you want the user to do something, buy something, sign up for something, do something. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is that it doesn't take a lot of wrong words. It doesn't take a lot of weird sentences for them to lose a little bit of trust, right? And for me, though, it's just as much the training and the development. And I mean, one of my good friends, Kevin Meng, he specializes in training writers and so on, right? And again, like if he needs to put in 10 times the time to get a Filipino to the same level as getting a native, no. Even though they might be cheaper on a monthly basis, it's not really worth the effort, right? And for me, like, again, when most SEOs go wrong is they focus on the cost, not the ROI. And the question is, how can you get a solid output very quickly at a cost that makes sense? Now, again, there's sometimes if you're building really cheap websites selling very cheap products or something, you might not have the money. Right. But in most cases, like in SEO, like in affiliate SEO that we do, the ROI are generally great. Mm-hmm. right? So the whole thing is, if you invest a little bit more in content, it's generally worth it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. There's that whole thing as well where, you know, if you're paying somebody a lower rate, then there's only so much they are going to be able to do for you to achieve what to get results, or they're just not going to get results. Whereas if you're paying a little bit more, it doesn't mean because they're necessarily better, but as a agency owner or somebody who does SEO, if I'm getting a retainer of 4,000 a month versus 2,000 a month, then I'm much more likely to succeed because I can invest more time in that and get the results. Yeah. So,
and that's exactly when I coach agency owners, that is the number one thing, right? Like I always use a simple example. If you need a table built and you have two carpenters come in, one say it will cost $100 and one say it will cost $500. Everyone assumes that the $500 guy will just be a better quality or be a better table.
Yeah.
Now, in most cases, it is exactly the same table being built, right? And that's the thing about SEO. So the problem is if the $100 guy, let's say he accidentally breaks a piece of wood or something, and he comes to you and say, oh, you know, you need to pay X amount more because I need to buy a new piece of wood, right? Whereas the $500 guy, I've already built it into his cost.
Yeah, yeah.
Same. Every web development agency out there, they give you an estimate, and you know that the price will never be the estimate, but likely 2, 3, 4, 5x the estimate, right?
Yeah.
Because there's always stuff they haven't thought about, or always other things. Whereas if you charge 5 times the amount of money up front, you will have less clients, but you can afford to make deliver what you like ideal service much, much better. And the thing is, if you charge a little money and don't deliver, people aren't happy because you charge them a lot of money. If you charge more money and you actually deliver, people are very happy.
Mm-hmm.
So you will generate more customers by charging more money, everything else being equal.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. And it applies like not just like say in SEO, like in any business, but also I think about it in the same, think of the time the same. I always try to talk to my team about, you know, that under promise, over deliver. Like don't say that if you think you can get it done tomorrow, don't say you can get it done tomorrow. Say you're going to get it done on Monday. And then when you do deliver it tomorrow, the client is ecstatically happy. They were disappointed initially, but they're ecstatically happy because you got it early. If you say you're going to get it tomorrow, but you deliver it Monday, they're pissed off with your service and they're pissed off with you, right? And it works with time and money the same.
And for most SEOs that run services, right? Like the key thing is that what they're really bad at generally is communication, right? The thing is that you have all these jokes with SEO clients and how horrible they are. Honestly, the clients aren't horrible. It's typically the SEOs that don't know how to communicate, don't know how to set expectations. And that's why clients turn out poorly, right? Like a client don't just wake up in the morning and want to be a total asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that wakes up in the morning and say, I want to be a total asshole. If people are being an asshole to you, it's typically because you have set them an expectation that they're not being met. Now, sometimes you can say, oh, I didn't promise or I didn't do this. But the whole thing is if the customer have an expectation, honestly, it doesn't matter what you told them. If you haven't set an expectation for what you deliver, how you deliver, yeah. how you communicate that yeah. delivery, it's on you, right?
Yeah, I think it's magnified a little bit in SEO world because to a customer it can be a bit of a dark art, so they don't really know what you're doing to get there to get the results necessarily half the time. Whereas you know if it was a carpenter going back to that, they know that what you're doing to build that table and they understand the process to a certain extent. So I think very quickly if they're not sure what's happening and therefore the level of trust isn't quite there. It's very easy for them to switch to like angry customer or because they're not really sure what they're getting. But again, it comes down to communication, right? Exactly the same.
It's still communication, right? Like you need to be very clear to a customer. What do you deliver? When do you deliver it? What should they expect? What do you expect they will see? And, you know, even set outcomes, like, you know, we're going to do X, Y, Z. You know, this is the minimum outcome we expect. This is sort of medium outcome and this is the top outcome. You know, we're going to do what we can, but this is kind of the expectation we're seeing, right? That's what we expect to happen within 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. So I guess one one thing before we kind of wrap it up, I guess, in terms of like processes and kind of managing kind of processes specifically around, you know, talking to our audience here, specifically around building sites where you've got like a writer and then uploading maybe an editor and a, you know, what kind of processes, how do you run those, you know, what technology, what tools do you use or what processes do you run to kind of get that kind of as streamlined and as efficient as possible?
Yeah, so typically, I mean, we played around with a lot of things. I think a tool like ClickUp, for example, is great. We have actually moved back. I mean, we are basically using, for all our internal processes, we're using Google, so Google Sheets. And we have a Google Sheet with all processes, and they're all documented in Google Docs. So that's how we do it from a process standpoint. Mm-hmm. Now, how we document them is typically written explanation followed by a video. So basically every single one, and it's broken down to small steps. So if we ever, like the problem I typically see is people record a half an hour video of how to do a whole process, but then a tiny piece in the middle changes. And then they're like, oh yeah, by the way, this tiny piece in the middle changed, right? But what we do is the other way around. We do a lot of videos that are a minute and a half, yeah, 3 minutes or whatever. And if something changes, it's not very difficult for the person who's responsible for that process to go and record a new video.
Right? Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
So that's typically how we do it. And yeah.
Cool. Excellent. So in terms of the SEO Mastery event that you had before the retreat, are those recordings available somewhere for people to go and grab? Or?
So they aren't right now, but they will be, I can probably say. So basically when we open the next event, so you can actually go to SEOMasterySummit.com and sign up right now. Mm-hmm. When we open the next event, we will actually give people the opportunity to buy the previous two events videos at a relatively low cost, okay, right? So they will be available, yes.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, thanks so much for your time today, Matt. Mads, I've really enjoyed speaking with you. Where else should people go if they want to hear more about you?
Yep. MattSingers.com is my website, and that's all about management, coaching, and consulting. I do a lot of podcasts. So I do typically 100 podcasts a year. So basically,
wow,
everywhere. I also have a management podcast myself. So also something to listen to. And else, I contribute quite a bit in various SEO Facebook groups and so on. I'm sure I'm already at 5,000 friends on Facebook, but yeah, you can definitely follow me. And there's also a great page for the SEO Mastery Summit as well. So if you love free content, that is a good place to go.
Excellent. Okay, thanks, Mads. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Likewise, have a good one.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.